Well, a diet high in beans, legumes, and green leafy vegetables has been shown to be beneficial for cardiovascular health, there are dietary fads that don't live up to the health food hype. Some supposedly healthy foods, in fact, may do the opposite of what you think, adding calories, weight, and artery-clogging cholesterol. Today on The Morning Show, we're going to bust the myths before they bust your gut. I'm Glenn Mobergen for Kate Archer Kent. Our guest today is Dr. Neil Barnard. He's a physician, clinical researcher, author, and an adjunct associate professor of medicine at the George Washington University School of Medicine and Health Sciences. He's also the founder of the nonprofit Barnard Medical Center and was a co-researcher of a review that was released in the Journal of the American College of Cardiology titled Trending Cardiovascular Nutrition Controversy. So we're going to look into some of those controversies today. And we're also going to ask you to weigh in. What health trends or diets have you followed in the past? Why did you choose that specific diet? And did you feel that you were taken to the cleaners when you did it? Did you feel that those diets or those fads somehow were promising more than they delivered? You can give us a phone call at 1-800-642-1234. That number again is 1-800-642-1234. Or you can email us at ideas@wpr.org, or you can tweet us at WPR Mornings. Dr. Neil Barnard, thanks so much for being with us today.
Great to be with you this morning.
Now, you and other cardiovascular researchers published a paper reviewing evidence on dietary patterns and nutrition trends that allegedly improve cardiovascular health. Why did you think it was necessary to demystify the entire topic?
Well, I think it's a bit, as you said in the introduction, that people are bombarded by all kinds of things. If you want to lose weight, the answer is just cut out calories or don't eat carbs. So suddenly you have people not eating sweet potatoes and beans and healthy food, and the weight loss that they might notice is only temporary. And meanwhile, because they've traded healthy sweet potatoes and beans and starchy foods for meat or cheese or something, their cholesterols go up. So people have really been the victims of unhealthy trends. And I think it shows no end in stopping. The food industry is ever more creative, not only in finding ways to lure us into their products, but also coming up with seemingly credible research studies to back up their claims.
So how many of those studies have been funded and or influenced by the food industry, and because of that may be biased? And how do patients and consumers weed through all of that information? How do you know who or what to trust?
We really tackled this in a big way a couple years ago when you may remember the headlines that doctors were wrong on cholesterol. The whole idea was we had thought cholesterol was a problem, but it turns out it's not a problem at all. And when we looked into this in more detail, this was really an effort by the egg industry to try to make cholesterol look okay. And they funded a number of studies. And if you fund a rather small study and you feed people eggs, and you compare it with sausage or something like that, you can show that the egg isn't a whole lot worse than sausage, and then you can publish that result. And the headline of the study can be portrayed as exonerating eggs, when in fact it was just a very poorly conducted study. Years ago, in the 1950s and 60s, industry wasn't really involved in this, and the government scientists were conducting really good quality research. But after about the year 2000, the harmful effects of cholesterol were so obvious that the only people funding studies really were involved in the egg industry. So now the majority of studies that come out on dietary cholesterol are funded by the egg industry, I'm sorry to say. So how can you tell the difference? I feel your pain. It's really hard for the consumer to know.
Well, you'd think there should be some disclaimer on these studies. Is there some way that people who may have heard of these studies or may have been exposed to some of this misinformation, is there some way you can go online and find out exactly who's paying for this stuff?
Oh, the studies acknowledge it directly. It will say right on the study itself, right there in black and white, funded by the American Egg Board. They are not alone. Right now in the state of Texas, the Texas Beef Checkoff Program is sending representatives to doctors' offices telling them to encourage their high cholesterol patients to eat beef. And it was because they did a study that showed that if you have lean beef in your diet, it's not a lot worse than chicken. and it was clearly funded by the beef industry, and it's not a healthy regimen at all, but somehow people sort of overlook the fine print.
Well, let's step back a little bit, and maybe you can give us an idea of how food consumption impacts cardiovascular disease. How significant is what you eat to a healthy heart?
Far more important than any other factor, with a possible exception of smoking. Back in the 1950s, we thought heart disease was caused by old age. You know, you're 65, you ought to have a heart attack. And now I have to say I no longer view 65 as old age, and I also have to say that there's no reason to have heart disease at any age. When Dr. Dean Ornish did his studies, he took people who, regardless of age, if they went to a more plant-based diet, their heart disease actually started to go away completely independent of age. So we started to realize genetics and age are very small factors. That what you eat is by far the biggest factor. And for heart disease, the big issues are saturated fat, which is the bad fat. Dairy products are the biggest contributor. Meat is second. And cholesterol itself, which is primarily in eggs, but it's in any food of animal origin.
Well, a lot of people are going to say, that's all the stuff I like. How can you convince people to have a healthy diet without giving up the foods that they really enjoy? What can they substitute and still get the satisfaction that they might get out of having a big juicy steak or a couple of over-easy eggs in the morning?
Yes. Well, I grew up in Fargo, and so I know well the Midwestern diet, and that's really kind of the way we ate all the time. But I guess there are a couple of things. First of all, not everybody is going to change. In the same way that not everyone is going to quit smoking, there are some people who will smoke, despite the fact that they are well aware of the risks. They will develop emphysema and chronic obstructive pulmonary disease, and some will develop cancer. The majority of Americans now are overweight or obese, despite the fact that food is the cause, and this is largely under the control of diet choices that we can make. But we live in a toxic society that pushes these things on us and pushes false solutions, like go ahead and eat these high-fat animal products, and if you need to lose weight, just starve yourself down for a little while and then resume eating that again. That's really not the right way to think. When we do research studies, and in fact, just last night we kicked off a new study where I had about 25 people in our audience in a conference room where they're all going to go on a vegan diet, no animal products at all, to lose weight. And the way we do it is we take a week and try to identify foods that they might actually enjoy, like breakfast of oatmeal topped with cinnamon and raisins, or maybe pancakes with maple syrup, or whatever it might be. Yogurt that would be a soy-derived yogurt rather than dairy yogurt. They just take a week and they test out the foods, and then once they figure out which ones they like, then they commit to about a three-week period of eating those foods. It's 100% vegan, no animal products at all, but the commitment is only for 21 days, and that makes it doable. And at the end of that period of time, because they're losing weight and their energy is better and they have diabetes, it's often getting better, then suddenly those foods start tasting pretty good and the steak that got them into trouble is no longer looked at so fondly.
Well, are you suggesting that people try to give up meat and eggs and all of those things completely and do a vegan diet, or is there a middle-of-the-road course that we could take?
Yes, that is what I am suggesting, and let me be clear. That the healthiest diet is one that doesn't have animal products in it at all. But because that sounds daunting to people, any change that a person makes in this direction is a good move. So people who eat smaller portions or have meatless Mondays or they make changes in this direction, that's all to the good. But when people quit smoking, it's dramatically better.
And what about fish? What about substituting fish or seafood for meat products? Is that better, or does it not make a difference?
People who eat only fish and no other meats are about halfway between the heavy meat eaters and the vegans with regard to their body weight or their risk of diabetes. So fish eaters have a little bit less body weight, a little bit less diabetes risk compared to meat eaters, but much more than people following vegan diets.
All right. Thank you so much. I think we're going to take a short break for news here, and we'll be back with you on the other side. Dr. Bernard,
He wants some seafood, mama.
We're talking about seafood, vegetable, fruits, and other ingredients in a healthy diet. What's healthy? What's not? How much of it is healthy? In what quantities? That's our topic today with Dr. Neil Barnard. He's a physician, clinical researcher, author, and an adjunct associate professor of medicine at the George Washington University School of Medicine and Health Sciences, also the founder of the nonprofit Barnard Medical Center. I'm Glenn Mobergen for Kate Archer Kent. It's the morning show. We'll be back with your questions and comments. But first, this news.
Shrimps and rice, every night.
The Beach Boys singing about their favorite vegetables on the morning show. I'm Glenn Mobergen for Kate Archer Kent. Today we're talking about the role vegetables, legumes, and other foods play in a healthy diet. And we're looking at some health food fads that don't live up to their billing. Our guest is Dr. Neil Barnard. He's a physician, clinical researcher, author, and an adjunct associate professor of medicine at the George Washington University School of Medicine and Health Sciences. He's also the founder of the nonprofit Barnard Medical Center. What health trends or diets have you followed in the past? Why did you choose that specific diet? What nutrition hypes would you like to have clarified? And how do you maintain a heart-healthy diet or lifestyle? All questions we'd like you to answer at 1-800-642-1234. That's 1-800-642-1234. Or you can email us at ideas@WPR.org or tweet us at WPR Mornings. Let's go to the phones right now. We've got Tim in Sauk City. Tim, you're on the morning show with Dr. Barnard.
Good morning, Neil. My question is, I debate with a gentleman who claims that a plant-based diet versus eating meat. If you're eating meat, there's 17 amino acids that are all combined in a red meat that if you go to plant-based, you have to have such a wide variety of nuts and legumes that it's almost impossible to equal eating that one slice of red beef.
Neil Barnard, your response to Tim.
Yes, Tim, I think you're right, he's wrong. That was sort of the 1950s idea that plants had what was called incomplete protein, and so you had to combine beans with grains, for example. And it is true that combining foods gives you better nutrition than just eating one alone, but people do that naturally. So you will get all the protein that you need from plant sources without any special combining. It's not difficult at all. In fact, if tomorrow, don't do this, but if you did, tomorrow if you ate nothing but broccoli the whole day, you would get about three times the amount of protein that your body actually requires. Green vegetables happen to just have a lot of protein. If the next day you ate nothing but lentils all day, you would get even more. So plants have a lot, and that's why plant-eating animals like bulls and stallions and rhinoceroses and elephants are big. You know, they have no trouble getting protein.
Now, Dr. Barnard, that's something I've never heard before. If you ate nothing but broccoli all day, you'd get more than enough protein to sustain you.
Well, now let me be clear. I'm not suggesting that a person actually do this because it's much better to mix your foods, and no one would want to because our brains are naturally wired to consume a variety of foods, but the federal government says for a woman she should have about 46 grams of protein a day, and a man about 56. If you ate nothing but broccoli in a day and you ate 2,000 calories, which is a normal amount, you would get 146 grams of protein. If it was all lentils, it'd be 157. But again, I'm not suggesting anybody do that. The whole point is just these foods are loaded with protein.
And Linda posted on the Ideas Network Facebook page, she writes, moderation in everything, special diets, special foods, it's all pretty much a sham. Neil, I suspect you would agree with that sentiment.
Well, I have a caveat. If my daughter likes to play the violin, and that's just great, and she's playing the violin, and after about 7 or 8 hours, I say, honey, you might need to study. Maybe you've got homework. How about having dinner? So you have to have moderation in good things. But how many cigarettes should she have? How many lines of cocaine do I want my daughter to do? Well, zero. So moderation only applies to good things. So if you're having a diet with a certain amount of meat and a certain amount of cheese and some vegetables and fruits, that is a prescription for heart disease. But if you have moderate amounts of healthy things like broccoli and other vegetables and beans and fruits and grains, that's a good diet.
We're talking to Dr. Neil Barnard. He's busting some food myths before they bust your gut. 1-800-642-1234 if you'd like to join the conversation. That's 1-800-642-1234. Let's go to Carl in Duluth, Minnesota. Carl, you're on the morning show with Dr. Neil Barnard.
Hi, good morning. Thanks for having me on. I have 2 points I want to make about my personal health. Number one, when I eat a meal or a snack that is high in carbohydrates and low in protein, my energy level crashes. And that's something about me personally, but I think that it demonstrates that not everyone behaves the same. Not everyone has the same dietary needs. Number two, I had open heart surgery when I was 19 years old. I had a problem with my aortic valve, and the valve was replaced with a valve from a cadaver that is non-living tissue. They gave me 15 years until I had to have it removed and have a new valve put in. It's been 15 years now. I'm 35. I'm a healthy. I am an active adult. Last time I went to the cardiologist, he said, you know, I have a heart murmur, but my heart is healthy. It compensates. I have no lifespan on the valve. I have no limit to how long it could last because my heart compensates. I have no plaque, no buildup on my arteries whatsoever. I eat meat on a very regular basis. And I believe that the decidedly unscientific vegan propaganda your guest is pushing ignores the nutrient deficiencies that come with veganism, ignores the difficulty of getting adequate protein, ignores the anemia problems. We are not rhinoceroses. Humans were evolved to have an omnivorous diet. That's all I wanted to say. Thank you.
Carl, thanks so much for the phone call. Dr. Neil Barnard, are you pushing vegan propaganda, and are we not rhinoceroses?
Well, first of all, I want to salute Carl. It sounds like that his health has rebounded from a bad situation, and that's good, and hopefully it'll stay that way. I understand, and having grown up in the Midwest myself, and having grown up as a meat eater and then taking up smoking and every kind of bad habit and trying to break those habits, I understand that people will say, well, if you're trying to take the cigarettes out of my hand, you're just trying to create a nanny state and that kind of thing. When we wrote this article for the Journal of the American College of Cardiology, our goal was not to look into propaganda but to look into clinical research studies. And that's how we spend our time. And so when Dr. Dean Ornish put people on a plant-based diet, it was under carefully controlled conditions, and he could show the arteries opening up again, and not just that people feel better, but you can actually look with angiography. You look into the arteries, and you can actually document what is actually happening. And when the National Institutes of Health funded our research team to put a vegan diet to the test for type 2 diabetes, it's under very carefully controlled conditions, and it's published by the American Diabetes Association. So I understand that some people try to push this away, but it's really quite clear that the closer we get to plant foods, the better off we're going to be. One other quick point, and I don't want to belabor it. There are more nutrient deficiencies on the diet that we all grew up with. A meat-based diet has more nutrient deficiencies than a vegan diet would. And the reason is that although meat does have protein, it doesn't have any fiber or any vitamin C, and it's low in antioxidants, whereas fruits and vegetables and plant foods are loaded with vitamins. That said, I do think that for Carl, thinking about getting complete nutrition on a vegan diet, there are two issues that I would raise. One is calcium. Eat your green leafy vegetables. That's a great calcium source. And you do need vitamin B12. You need it for healthy nerves, healthy blood. But that's really about it. You're not going to get anemic on this diet unless, you know, there's some other malady that you have. You actually get a little bit more iron on a vegetable-rich diet than you do on a meat-based diet.
The 2015 to 2020 Dietary Guidelines for Americans recommended three healthy eating patterns: the healthy U.S. style, the healthy Mediterranean style, and the healthy vegetarian eating pattern. Could you briefly, Dr. Barnard, explain why these approaches to health and diet should be strongly encouraged by physicians, and what's the difference between the three?
Yes, great question. You know, up until recently, and even now at many places, doctors aren't taught much about nutrition. That might have made sense back a century ago when we were dealing with infections. So if you're fighting tuberculosis or smallpox, who cares what you eat? You know, what you need is an antibiotic.
And we've carried that thinking with us now into a new century when smallpox is not our issue. Our issue is diabetes and obesity and hypertension, and these are not caused by a deficiency of some medication. They're caused by what is on our plate in the vast majority of cases. So what these diets have in common that the government described was that they all shift us away from a meat-based diet to a more plant-based diet. So a vegan diet goes all the way. It doesn't have any animal products at all. And those people are the thinnest and healthiest. But a Mediterranean pattern is sort of three-quarters of the way there, and it's much more vegetables and fruits, no butter. You'd have olive oil instead. And then the healthy U.S. pattern said, basically, you're eating a typical American diet, but you're eating only small portions of the meat and the pork chops and that kind of stuff.
And
so they're pushing us in a healthy direction.
We've already touched on this briefly, but again, how does the seafood or pescatarian diet affect one's overall health? And is that diet considered to be healthy? And if so, in what quantities should you eat seafood and what should you avoid?
When we compare people who, let's say a person switches from beef to fish, and they don't eat any red meat at all, and they're eating only fish, that person's risk of diabetes is lower than it was before. And as a group, their risk of obesity is lower too. However, when they go to a diet that doesn't include any animal products at all, no fish or anything, they get a much greater benefit. So we no longer promote fish because it really just turns out to be a halfway measure. Now, speaking of different fish types, though, some people choose fatty fish like salmon. Chinook salmon is about 50% fat, and they do that because the omega-3s interfere with clotting, and so it's harder for you to have a heart attack if you can't form a blood clot in a coronary artery. It's sort of like taking an aspirin every day. But the problem is because it's so fatty, that's the reason that fish eaters are heavier than vegetarians and vegans. So it's been a bit of a trade-off there.
Let's go to Michael in La Crosse. Michael, you're on the morning show with Dr. Neil Barnard.
Good morning. One of the things that has helped me in my diet is changing from the mindset that eating all these vegetables is pleasurable experience. Not that I don't want my food to taste good, but changing it to one where just looking at food as energy.
Yeah, Michael, we've got a bad connection, but what you called in to say is that you're now eating for energy instead of just to have a pleasurable experience. Dr. Barnard.
You know, you are not alone. In the world of pro sports at the highest level, there are so many people who are fueling their bodies differently. It started out with the long-distance runners, Scott Jurek and Brendan Brazier. They went totally vegan for a couple reasons. The anti-inflammatory effect of these foods would mean that their recovery time after a workout was much less. And then it was Serena Williams and Venus Williams in the tennis world, and Novak Djokovic and other top tennis players did it. And then now it's a bit of the NBA. Tom Brady, years ago, he said, look, I'm 40 years old. How am I going to survive as a quarterback? You know, I want to go to another Super Bowl. So during the season, he eats a really healthy diet. And same with Aaron Rodgers, same issue. And so although, you know, they grow up with cheese and meat and these kinds of things, they really largely set those foods aside when they're trying to be at their peak. So you and I aren't in the Super Bowl, and we may not be running a marathon, but your energy is better and your inflammation is less with a healthy diet.
Let's see if we can bust some myths here. Juice cleanses have been a popular go-to trick for weight loss in America. In other words, drinking nothing but juice for a while in order to get your weight down. Has juicing proven to be an effective and healthy plan to heart health?
No, really not. First of all, the juicing itself is okay. There's nothing wrong with some carrot juice or orange juice or something like that. Perfectly fine. It's got lots of vitamins. However, if that's your way, and you can have nothing but juice, and the idea is somehow my digestive tract and my bloodstream is going to all be cleansed as a result of this, and then you go back to what you're eating before, it really doesn't work very well. One other craze that's come in that I'm really quite worried about is coconut oil. People are using it on everything. They put it into puddings and in salad dressings and all kinds of things. And the rationale is that it's better than butter. And it may be that it actually reduces your, or it doesn't raise your cholesterol as much as butter, but it raises your cholesterol a whole lot more than, say, olive oil or any other oils. So
my sense is that the coconut oil is very good for polishing your shoes or your car or putting a little bit in your hair to give it a shine, but I wouldn't eat it.
Well, coconut oil and palm oil are both solid at room temperature. Does that play a difference here? Olive oil and sunflower oil are liquid.
That's exactly right. You know, when I was a kid, my mother would cook up bacon in the morning, and then when the bacon strips were all taken out of the pan, she would put them on a paper towel to cool down. That hot bacon grease, she would pour it into a jar to save it. And she didn't put it in the refrigerator. She just put it on the shelf because as it cools down, it solidifies. And the fact that at room temperature it's a solid is a sign that it's high in saturated fat. And if it's liquid, that's a sign that it's high in polyunsaturated fat, which is healthier. And for extra credit, if something is solid in the refrigerator but liquid on your shelf, like olive oil, that's a sign that it's high in monounsaturates. So you don't need a chemistry degree. You just need to take a look at whether it's solid or liquid.
And how healthy is olive oil? I've heard that it increases good cholesterol as opposed to bad cholesterol. What is good cholesterol and bad cholesterol, and what's the role in olive oil in increasing one and decreasing the other?
Yes, you have cholesterol particles in your blood, and some of them are bad. That's LDL cholesterol, and bad meaning that they are going to invade the artery wall and lead to little bumps, forming that can narrow the arteries. Good cholesterol, or HDL, is like a garbage truck carrying the bad cholesterol away. Olive oil is a lot better than butter or cream. Although it is fatty, it's still as fattening as those foods, but it tends not to raise bad cholesterol.
It seems as though the gluten-free diet is also trending, but what's the truth behind a gluten-free diet for those who don't have gluten sensitivity or gluten-related diseases?
Yeah, I have to say, I think gluten-free is okay. About less than 1% of the population has celiac disease. They must avoid gluten. Roughly 1 in 10 people just feels better when they don't eat gluten. Gluten is wheat, barley, or rye. And they feel better mentally, and their digestion is better. So you can try it. If you don't feel any better, then there's no harm in gluten. But it's perfectly fine to avoid it if you want to.
And we talked about juicing briefly. Are fruit smoothies and vegetable smoothies better than drinking juice?
All depends on what goes in them. If you start your day with putting some green vegetables in and a banana and some soy milk and you blend it all up, that's pretty good. That's going to beat the heck out of the bacon and eggs. If what's going in there is something else not so healthy, maybe not such a good thing. The concern that I have about smoothies is it's a lot of calories in a very short period of time. So that's the only risk, is it's a little bit easy to overdo it.
Home cooking, health, nutrition, and dietary fads all on the menu today with Dr. Neil Barnard, a physician, clinical researcher, author, and an adjunct associate professor of medicine at the George Washington University School of Medicine and Health Sciences. I'm Glenn Mobergen for Kate Archer Kent. It's the morning show. We'll be back with more of your questions and comments in a bit, but first this news. Bread and butter, toast and jam, popular at the diner, but are they healthy? It's the morning show. I'm Glenn Mobergen for Kate Archer Kent, and our guest today is Dr. Neil Barnard, a physician, clinical researcher, author, and an adjunct associate professor of medicine at the George Washington University School of Medicine and Health Sciences. He is the founder of the nonprofit Barnard Medical Center. If you'd like to join the conversation, you can give us a call at 1-800-642-1234. That's 1-800-642-1234. You can email us at ideas@wpr.org, or you can tweet us at WPR Mornings. We have full phone lines right now, so let's go to Kevin in Lancaster. Kevin, you are on the morning show with Dr. Neil Barnard.
Good morning. Good morning, doctor. Hey, I spent a couple years in the Peace Corps in a developing country, and the diet there was very monotonous: cornmeal three times a day, some vegetables, etc. And it caused me to think and to actually adopt a practice of minimizing my variety of meals. I have just a few dinners that I rotate through and lunches and breakfast, with the notion that maybe my gut, my stomach, and my digestive system develops an efficiency of metabolizing the food and extracting nutrients because I limit the variety. Is there any validity, do you think, to that?
Interesting. There are people who say stick with certain kinds of foods because your digestive tract sort of switches on its fruit digesting mode, and then later it'll switch to its grain digesting mode. I think you'll know if it works or not really based on your digestive symptoms. And if mixing foods doesn't cause any problems, I think it's perfectly okay. From a biochemical standpoint, with regard to its effect on cholesterol or cancer risk, it wouldn't make a difference. But we do sometimes see differences with regard to just digestive comfort. So it might make a difference there.
We often hear the term superfood associated with berries and brightly colored vegetables in our diets. Why is this, and what role do antioxidants play in fruits and vegetables when we consume them in the form of berries?
Yeah, berries are the most neglected, great, healthy food. That dark color comes from what are called anthocyanins. And anthocyanins, it's a whole range of pigments, including the pigments that nature uses to paint the trees in October as the fall colors are coming out. Those are all anthocyanins. They're antioxidants. In your body, antioxidants knock out free radicals, which are disease-causing compounds that form during normal metabolism. So people who eat the darkly colored berries, like blueberries, and by the way, I would put grapes in this category as well, but cranberries and others, they get an enormous load of healthy antioxidants. We believe that has an anti-cancer effect. The latest frontier in research is Alzheimer's disease, where we're seeing that diet, frankly, we were shocked to discover that diet can play a major role in whether you develop Alzheimer's. And if we can harness that, can you imagine not having to be afraid that when you're 85, you won't be able to remember your children's names anymore? And we do think that that is where the science is going.
Rick in Janesville emailed. He says he's in his late 50s, that he exercises regularly and eats no red meat. He says his cholesterol rate is still bad and his blood pressure is borderline high. He asks, is that just hereditary, or what can he eat to improve the cholesterol ratio and lower his blood pressure?
Oh, great question. It is conceivable that it's hereditary, but the chances of that are only maybe 1 in 10, because we don't give our kids just DNA. We give them recipes too. So in other words, when heart disease or hypertension run in families, it's typically the result of food habits that continue through the family. So here's what I would suggest you might try. Take a short period of time, like 8 weeks or 12 weeks. During that time, do as perfect a diet as you possibly can, and then test yourself before and after. And if your blood pressure has not come down or your cholesterol has not come down, then it is genetic. But chances are it will improve. Now, what's a perfect diet? It's vegetables, fruits, whole grains, beans, no animal products whatsoever, because animal products have animal fat and cholesterol, and those things will affect both your cholesterol level and your blood pressure. So avoid those things. It'll take you a week or so to figure out what you're going to eat, but do that. Do a test, and it will change your life, because it's amazing to see what is really under your control.
Let's go to Cowboy Joe in Viroqua. Cowboy Joe, you're on the morning show with Dr. Neil Barnard.
Good morning, gentlemen.
Good morning.
And interesting to get a call from Cowboy Joe, who's actually in the process of opening his bakery out here in Viroqua, and wanted to talk briefly, as you finish the show here, about the importance of water to all of this and the importance of moderation when it comes to sugar. I myself have some internal inflammation issues that I've been dealing with for several years, and I have found that sugar in excess, processed sugar, can aggravate the inflammation. I don't want to say necessarily, because I'm not a doctor, that sugar causes inflammation, but if we focus on moderation in supplemental sugar, and it's pervasive in the processed food industry, if we try to focus more on sugars from fruits and vegetables that are gut is going to benefit greatly.
Cowboy Joe, thanks so much for the phone call. Dr. Bernard, your reaction?
Yeah, I think you're right. You know, the sugar that's in an apple or an orange, or, you know, fruits of any kind, that's fine. That's what the body was designed for. But people figured out how to extract sugar from sugar cane or sugar beets, and then you put it in a little ceramic mug, and you call it table sugar. Or you make high fructose corn syrup, and you can pack quite a lot of it in a soda, and you really don't need that. That's excess sugar.
And Sarah on Facebook, Neil, wants to know, what do you think about yogurt, particularly Greek yogurt?
Yogurt is a dairy product like other dairy products, and which is to say that it's an animal product that has animal fat in it, and it does have cholesterol, and it has quite a lot of sugar in it that came out of the cow. So people consume it because it has bacterial cultures, but you can get vegan yogurt if you want to, and I would suggest that that's a better choice, and particularly for people with asthma, a migraine, inflammatory conditions of any kind, rheumatoid arthritis, get away from dairy for a while and see if you don't feel better there, quite apart from the questions of the effect of cholesterol and fat on your cholesterol level.
Let's go back to the phones. Andrew in Heartland. Andrew, you're on the morning show with Dr. Neil Barnard.
Hey, thank you. Hey, I was wondering about raw foods, you know, the whole foods, you know, vegetables like that, as opposed to canned or frozen. And, you know, you talked about cooking in olive oil, for instance. You know, I read a study about you know, potatoes fried up. They're terrible for you, apparently. I don't know if you have any thoughts on, I mean, should we only be eating whole raw foods, or is a canned vegetable okay, or frozen ones? You know, just your thoughts there.
Okay. If what you mean is, if I buy some broccoli that's fresh and I cook that up versus broccoli that's frozen, the two are about the same nutritionally. And while we would think the fresh has got to be better, keep in mind it might have sat there for quite a number of days, as opposed to the frozen might have been harvested, quick frozen, and so the nutrient quality is about the same. Canned is pretty close as well, and the big difference, of course, is as we've talked about throughout the show, between vegetables and the animal-derived products. The vegetables are much more nutritious. If you mean raw foods, uncooked foods, that's really kind of a different issue because it's a question of which ones they are. There's some foods that we really don't digest very well raw. You might be able to digest an apple or an orange, but broccoli and cauliflower don't go down so well if they're not cooked a little bit.
Andrew, thanks so much for the phone call. Let's squeeze one more call in. We've got Matt in Glendale who's been waiting patiently. Matt, you're on the morning show.
Oh, thank you for having me. Appreciate it. This is nice to be able to comment on the subject. I wanted to bring up a couple important studies, important doctors that I think should really be taken into account. One is Dr. Weston A. Price, and the other, Dr. Joseph Mercola. Dr. Weston A. Price, I don't know if anyone's familiar with him or not, but they ought to be. He's probably the foremost, most important researcher in nutrition in the 20th century. He traveled the world in the early part of the 20th century into dozens of different countries and observed the diets of primitive peoples in comparison to and indigenous peoples in comparison to more modernized groups, and found that amongst the indigenous primitive peoples, eating their normal indigenous primitive diet for thousands of years, namely seafoods, animal-based foods, milks,
and
dairy,
Matt,
butter,
Matt,
and so on, they had zero tooth decay, but the modernized groups had rampant tooth decay. So the fact of the matter that bone broth, raw dairy, eggs, animal products, is significantly more nutritious than plant-based diet. There's also many studies that show that vegetarianism, veganism, lacking in the sulfur-based amino acid produces malnutrition and morbidity and mortality rates increase for that.
All right, Matt, thanks for the phone call. Sorry to rush you along, but we're down to our last minute here, and we wanted to give Dr. Neil Barnard a chance to respond.
Okay, I think you're right that the influx of sugar is bad for your teeth. That's true. A plant-based diet is terrific for certain things, cardiovascular health, good for trimming your waistline, bringing down your blood pressure, reducing your cancer risk, and we also believe it will reduce Alzheimer's risk. So where this is most important is really not just us. It's for the kind of diet that we teach our children, and that's what I think is probably the most important consideration.
And Dr. Neil Barnard, finally, what is the ideal diet for the future of the health of the global population? We have more than 7 billion people on this world. What's the best diet for all of us?
Well, there's no way. There is zero possibility of feeding a hungry planet if we're going to grow feed grains, corn and soybeans, and feed it to chickens, and feed it to pigs, and feed it to cows, and then give them the little, take the little bit of food that comes out of slaughter or making dairy. You have to use the grains, the beans, the vegetables, the fruits themselves. And this is, ecologists have been talking about this for a very long period of time. So it's not just a good diet for the animals and good for your coronary arteries, but it's also really the way to be ecologically responsible, too.
Thank you so much, Dr. Barnard. We could have gone on for another hour. Dr. Neil Barnard, a physician, clinical researcher, author, and an adjunct associate professor of medicine at the George Washington University School of Medicine and Health Sciences. He is also the founder of the Barnard Medical Center and was a co-researcher of a review released in the Journal of the American College of Cardiology titled Trending Cardiovascular Nutrition Controversies. I'm Glenn Mobrigan for Kate Archer Kent. This Hour of the Morning show is produced by Niasia Ellison, on-air production by Keely Boltina, and technical direction by our executive producer, Michelle Johnson. Coming up tomorrow at this time, we will learn about wild, wacky winter sports during the Wisconsin Weekend edition of The Morning Show.